Pittsburgh Radio News.
We were one paycheck away from homelessness, and that's how I wound up on the sidewalks of San Pedro. But today, I live at 333.
The Downtown Women's Shelter gets creative in the fight against homelessness. Good afternoon from the University of Southern California, and welcome to Annenberg Radio News for Thursday, November 29, 2012. I'm Kristen Nakashioya. Clerical workers at the ports of Los Angeles and Long Beach have been striking for days, but this afternoon the Los Angeles Harbor Employers Association held a press conference. Representatives say they want to negotiate, but won't hire workers they don't need. Calls to the association were not returned by broadcast, but earlier today our own Max Swartz spoke with one of the striking workers.
It's been more than 2 years since clerical workers at the Port of L.A. had a contract. This week, the workers walked off the job to force contract negotiations in the hopes of receiving one, and that jobs will no longer be outsourced to non-union members. John Fugot, head of the Office Clerical Unit of the International Longshore and Warehouse Union, Local 63, explained the reasons for the strike.
This strike is about the outsourcing of jobs. These employers have implemented technology that allows them to allow others, non-bargaining unit members, to perform work that we have historically done.
Fugot added that new technology could allow workers abroad through a portal to access port computers in both Los Angeles and Long Beach to do the work the people he represents have historically done. The strike has closed all but one of the port's 8 terminals. The workers' colleagues from the Port of Long Beach joined them, closing 3 of the 6 Long Beach terminals. The silver lining in all of this is that most of the goods slated for the shelves this holiday season have already arrived in the United States, which means this fight probably won't raise prices. In the long run, however, consumers are expected to be negatively impacted by this strike. That's because other goods will take longer to reach the 2 ports before they can be sent across the country. This delay may lead to supply shortages and rising prices to compensate for the increased shipping costs. Fugot said he wants the strike to end as soon as possible. But the Harbor Employees Union does not feel there is a reason to go back to the table because the ILWU has not changed their demands, which are:
what we're proposing is contract language that would clearly describe what the technology can be used for and what it will not be used for. And specifically, the language would not allow the employers to outsource these jobs that are absolutely crucial to the local community.
The ports can't operate without clerical workers because the longshoremen who load and unload ships have not crossed the picket lines. Ships waiting to enter the harbor and those currently in the harbor will not be serviced until the longshoremen come back to work. The strike continued on in the rain on Thursday, even though on Tuesday an arbitrator said the workers must return to their posts. Max Swartz, Annenberg Radio News.
A report released today details LAUSD's ineffectual response to sexual misconduct by its employees. After a major scandal at a South LA elementary school and multiple lawsuits, state investigators took a closer look at how the district handles abuse. Aaron Schrank has more.
California auditors found that the school district has been slow to act on allegations of employees' sexual misconduct. The review found that the school system failed to report many allegations to the commission that manages teacher credentials. That notification is required by state law. LAUSD was late in reporting 144 cases. 31 of these cases were reported more than 3 years late. The audit was commissioned amid public outrage after a third-grade teacher at Miramonte Elementary School was arrested and charged with molesting 23 children. That man, Mark Berndt, pleaded not guilty and is being held on $23 million bail. Superintendent John Dacey says the district has revamped its policies for investigating and reporting misconduct, and he accepts the blame put on the district, calling the audit honest and accurate. Aaron Schrank, Annenberg Radio News.
A new boutique opened selling handmade crafts and vintage clothing on South Los Angeles Street today. Above the store are 2 floors of beautiful modern housing. But this space isn't just any downtown apartment building. It is the newest facility for the Downtown Women's Center. Catherine Davis was there for the grand opening.
47 formerly homeless women will have a new home for the holidays this year, and today was their housewarming party. The Downtown Women's Center has been providing housing, health programs, and job training to LA's homeless women since 1978. Until now, the center had just 71 single-occupancy apartments at their San Pedro building. Today, they opened their second location.
It's a cold place out there. Many of us were not there because we chose to be. We were there because we were one paycheck away from homelessness. And that's how I wound up on the sidewalks of San Pedro. But today, I live at 333 South Los Angeles Street.
That's Janine Betts. She supported herself with a retail job until medical problems made it impossible for her to work on her feet all day. When she lost her job, she became part of the fastest-growing segment of LA's homeless population. Single adult women now make up 33% of the 50,000 homeless people in Los Angeles County, up from only 5% in the 70s.
Unfortunately, that's where we're seeing the biggest increases at this time.
That's Downtown Women's Center CEO Lisa Watson. Most women who live at the Downtown Women's Center stay long-term, an average of 7 years. That provides a lot of stability for the residents. But Watson says that means that the center's housing is always in high demand.
There is always a waiting list. However, we do help women to find temporary emergency housing, which, I mean, in all honesty, is just not good enough. But it's the most that we can do at this point. And we're hoping and working with other organizations to continue to build more housing in L.A.
Even if the Downtown Women's Center can't house every homeless woman in L.A., for the 47 women who just moved in, this is a big deal. The new center is a real home. Inside, it has designer decor, sunny yellow walls, relaxing common areas, and multiple kitchens. Janine Betts says her new home is...
amazing! Amazing!
Betts will be staying at the Downtown Women's Center as long as it takes her to finish her training toward becoming a therapist. In addition to a roof over her head, she says the Downtown Women's Center gives her a supportive community.
The women that they selected to be in the house, they're all very strong women that, you know, have a story, but that are willing to help each other. And it's really nice because it's women helping women.
In addition to housing, the new Women's Center on Los Angeles Street is home to a chic new retail store open to the public. The Made by DWC Boutique sells vintage designer clothing, as well as journals, candles, Christmas ornaments, and other crafts handmade by women at the center. All of the proceeds from the store will go back to the women that the center serves. Catherine Davis, Annenberg Radio News.
83-year-old lesbian widow Edith Windsor may finally have her day in the U.S. Supreme Court. Tomorrow, the justices will meet to determine whether to rule on the Federal Defense of Marriage Act, or DOMA. That's the federal law that defines marriage as between a man and a woman. After Windsor's longtime female partner died 3 years ago, she had to pay higher estate taxes than other married couples, even though same-sex marriage is recognized in New York, where she lives. She sued, claiming this violated the Constitution's Equal Protection Clause. USC law professor David Cruz says that if the court hears the case, it will tackle questions that are key to the gay marriage debate in the country.
If a state chooses to let same-sex couples get married, does the federal government have to recognize it? Did the federal government unlawfully discriminate back in 1996 when it passed the so-called Defense of Marriage Act?
If the court decides to rule on the case, the justices will hear arguments in March. Beatles fans will honor legendary singer, songwriter, and lead guitarist George Harrison today at a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. For one man, this is more than a celebration, but a chance to promote the Beatles' message of peace and understanding. Denise Guerra has more.
George Harrison wrote the song Here Comes the Sun in 1969, and despite the rain today, his words provide the audience a sense of comfort. Today marks the anniversary of the death of George Harrison, who in 2001 died of throat cancer here in Los Angeles. Known as the Quiet Beatle, he's written several of the band's most prolific music, including... these songs are the reason why 68-year-old Jerry Rubin continues to hold public memorials in honor of the Beatles' members the world lost.
It's just so appropriate to honor them by doing something special, even some little thing that we could think of to promote peace.
Rubin is a longtime peace activist and has organized a 10-day peace endeavor starting today and ending on December 8th, the day of John Lennon's passing. Both memorials are located on the Beatles' star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame in front of the Capitol Records Tower building in Hollywood.
It encouraged people to do a little bit something extra to promote peace during that 10-day period, whether it be in their community, in their family environment, or even something within themselves personally.
This message of peace is the reason why the Beatles are so important to Reuben. Since John Lennon's death in 1980, Reuben made a commitment to doing these remembrances every year, one for each singer's birthday and death.
Try to do it in a way that's not so much a day of sadness, but a time of celebrating their life and music and their dream of world peace.
Reuben will join several other Beatles fans tonight at 6 p.m., rain or shine. Denise Guerra, Annenberg Radio News.
It looks like this rain may continue throughout the weekend. Tonight will be chilly and cloudy with a low of 56 degrees, but only a slight chance of rain. However, tomorrow rain is expected with a 50% chance, and the high is at 66 degrees. Saturday and Sunday have highs of 65 degrees, lows of 57, and a 20% chance of rain. Later on Annenberg Radio News, a documentary filmmaker speaks with us about a Guatemalan murder mystery and its implications for women around the world. The LA Auto Show kicks off today with a sneak preview this evening at the Convention Center downtown. Among the big developments, 24 new all-electric and hybrid models. Melissa Runnels talks to the industry experts about the growth of the green car industry.
The U.S. economy has grown by only 1.98% as of today, according to Kiplinger's. That's pretty sluggish. But one bright spot is auto sales. They're up higher than at any time since 2007. Southern Californians buy the most cars of all Americans, 11% of all cars sold in the U.S. They also like them green. This weekend's L.A. Auto Show is highlighting electric and hybrid cars, with the big automakers rolling out dozens of new models. Jessica Caldwell, senior analyst for Edmunds.com, says L.A. is the place to do it.
Southern California is the biggest hybrid and electric market. In fact, about a quarter of all hybrids are sold here in Southern California, so it's huge.
Why? We drive a lot and pay some of the highest gas prices in the nation. Green driving makes sense. But, Caldwell says, it'll be a while before the rest of the nation catches up.
I don't think, you know, hybrids and electric vehicles are for every area. I think, you know, in some rural places, there are specific needs for cars. So I don't think that it'll be, you know, complete adoption for some time.
That's in part because the infrastructure for electric cars, for instance, charging stations, isn't really in place, even in SoCal. But companies like Toyota aren't waiting around. They're focusing on cars like the Prius.
It does not require you to do anything at all other than put gas in it and drive it.
That's John Hansen, Toyota's National Manager for Environmental and Safety Communications. Part of the problem for would-be electric car owners is that batteries presently don't hold enough charge, long enough, and cheaply enough, without reverting to gasoline.
The costs right now with the current battery chemistries that we have are very high.
Towards that end, Toyota expects to have a hybrid hydrogen fuel cell car on the market by 2015. Despite the imperfections, the market for green cars is expected to reach 9 million vehicles sold worldwide over the next 5 years. Says Edmunds' Jessica Caldwell.
And people need cars, and they seem to be going out and buying them, which is good news.
And if they're green, that's even better. Melissa Runnels, Annenberg Radio News.
Violence against women is an epidemic in Guatemala, and it's not a top priority for law enforcement or the courts. Today, our Rosalie Murphy spoke with Kimberly Baustia, a documentary filmmaker who made a film that follows a woman who deals with this reality when her sister is murdered.
Could you just describe what happens in the film?
The main character is named Rebecca. Her sister was Adela, and she had been murdered by her ex-boyfriend. That was in 2007. So the film basically follows through all the obstacles that she needs to overcome in order to see that her sister's murder case is actually seen out all the way through, which is a huge thing to overcome in Guatemala, because essentially in the past decade, 6,000 women have been killed and only 2% of those cases have been solved. And she's really up against all the odds because, for instance, when she goes into the police and asks for the report, they don't find the report anywhere. She actually finds out that the judge that was going to oversee the trial was accused of killing his own wife. So you see that violence is very, very present on all levels. A lot of people are afraid of actually like reporting violence and denouncing violence because of the very real fact that many people who have reported violence have been killed.
Is this a problem that's unique to women and women victims and witnesses?
When there's victim blaming, oftentimes violence is supposedly justified. Like, oh, okay, well, we're going to write off this case because surely her family won't come forward and demand justice because she must have been a sex worker if we found her on the side of the road naked.
You told me earlier that you've since started a foundation in Guatemala for young women. What does that foundation do and how does it help address this, you know, systemic problem?
The collective itself is a group of young people that have both witnessed domestic violence and have also experienced sexual violence. And from there, the collective started to travel to different communities and to present both the film and violence prevention workshops and to promote a texting service that we have there, which is called Texting Peace. In Spanish, we call it Mensajes de Paz. What we do is we will collect audience members' contact information and then later send them messages so that they have updates on resources, so that they understand what the cycle of violence is, so that they understand that violence is not only physical, it's also mental, emotional, sexual, psychological, economic.
You seem to have worked, you know, so hard to build that community in Guatemala. How does that transfer back to work within the United States? Is this a problem that pervades in immigrant communities? And what does it mean for women here especially to be in solidarity with these victims?
You know, in the U.S., every day, 3 women die because of domestic violence murder. And that's a really high number. And this is something that's very real. One thing that's very prevalent as well is, you know, the fact that a lot of Central American women and South American women are coming from histories in which they are pretty much just very distrusting of authorities. They don't report violence. A lot of them are afraid of reporting because of their legal status. So a lot of women don't report domestic violence because they're afraid that they might get deported. And in the past, women have been deported for denouncing domestic violence, you know, and reporting it.
And just out of curiosity, how often do you go back to Guatemala?
So the last time that I was in Guatemala was in March. Usually I'm there around this time of year. Because November 25th is an International Day to End Violence Against Women, we have to kind of also do inventory on our own personal lives. We need to also do that introspective work before we can continue with solidarity work.
That was Kimberly Baustia speaking with Rosalie Murphy. Justice for My Sister screens at USC tonight at 5. When it rains, it doesn't have to pour for Los Angeles roads to shut down. Rain in LA caused nearly 200 accidents this morning, including a crash on the 134 freeway that killed one person. 2 others suffered minor injuries. A quarter inch of rain has fallen in LA in the last 24 hours. The very first Batmobile is for sale. This was the 19-foot car used in the 1960s TV show starring Adam West. In reality, it was a modified Lincoln, but on TV, it had lasers, smoke screens, and of course, a superhero driver. The auction house won't say how much they want for the car, but bidding is scheduled for January. Now we check in with Francis Wang to see what's coming up on Annenberg TV News at 6 p.m. on Trojan Vision.
Thanks, Kristen. Coming up on ATVN, Julia Dang went to protest at a Century City bank. Chelsea Goss will take you go-karting and more on Lindsay Lohan's arrest early this morning. We'll tell you more at 6, so make sure to tune in.
That's it for this Thursday. We had help today from Sam Weiser. Rosalie Murphy is our producer. Our executive producer is Aaron Schrank. For all of us here at Annenberg Radio News, I'm Kristen Nakashioya.